Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Tony Hayward, who is the CEO of BP, was on one of the Sunday morning television programs over the weekend. Now, remember, Hayward referred to what has happened in the Gulf early on as a tiny spill when he and his executives knew full well that this was going to turn into the worst environmental disaster in U.S. history. But what he said on Sunday caught my attention. He said, "I'm sorry. We're sorry for the massive disruption it's caused their lives, the people who live in that area. There's no one who wants this over more than I do. I'd like my life back." He'd like his life back. Rand Paul has been thoroughly repudiated by his home state legislature, the Kentucky Senate, reacting to the comments by Republican Rand Paul, has adopted a resolution declaring any form of discrimination to be inconsistent with American values. Yeah, it's kind of watered down, but it's still a repudiation. Louisville Democratic Senator Gerald Neal introduced the resolution Friday during a special session on the state budget. It was adopted without objection in the predominantly Republican chamber. Remember, Rand Paul said in an interview with Rachel Maddow that the federal government shouldn't have the power to force restaurants, for example, to serve minorities if business owners didn't want to. Senator Neal, who introduced the resolution, said Paul's extreme belief has made Kentucky a laughingstock. We were impressed today, as I was on yesterday, impressed deeply by the absolute refusal of commentators, radio and television, network and cable, to condemn without equivocation Israel's criminal act in international water yesterday. Not a one of these people. We're going to play some sound for you in a second. I want you to hear White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs, who claims that he didn't have enough of an understanding of international law to give a straight-up answer as to whether or not a military attack on an unarmed ship delivering humanitarian aid, trying to penetrate an illegal blockade, and in that process murdering 10 people, injuring 50 others, whether or not that constituted a violation of international law. Robert Gibbs. This is another member of the Obama administration, to me, who just flushed himself down the toilet. And what the hell is wrong with Rick Sanchez in the afternoon on CNN, who also could do nothing but equivocate where it concerned this issue, this horrific event? Let's be sure we understand what happened here. Especially the government of Netanyahu, who is as close to a fascist as you will find in the Israeli government. The background, I think, is worth noting. Keep in mind, it's Netanyahu who is ordering this. There's an organization called IRIN News, irinnews.org. It is a UN Humanitarian News and Information Service. And on the 18th of May, 2 weeks ago, it issued a report on Gaza. And a couple of comments: failing economy in Gaza, rising unemployment, deteriorating power, sanitation, and health facilities. The health of Gaza's population continues to worsen. According to a recent WHO World Health Organization report, as a consequence of Israel's blockade of the Gaza Strip, 98% of industrial operations have been shut down since 2007. There are acute, desperate shortages of fuel, cash, cooking gas, and other basic supplies. Filippo Grandi, who is the Commissioner General of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, told the news agency, quote, "We are telling everybody not to build walls around Gaza. That's what we've been saying loud and clear. If Gaza gets encircled by walls everywhere, it can only explode. This is almost a law of physics, and that would be a catastrophe for everybody involved, for the Egyptians, for the Israelis, for the region as a whole." The ban, end quote, the ban on imports of building materials has prevented the rebuilding of some 7,000 homes destroyed by Israel's military operation in Gaza last year. And the ban on imports has prevented the construction of some 7,500 homes to cater to an expanding population. Water-related health problems are widespread in Gaza because of the blockade. Israel's military operation in Gaza, which destroyed water and sanitation infrastructure, including reservoirs, wells, and thousands of kilometers of piping. It should be remembered, Gaza is not a refugee camp. It is a city of 1.5 million people. It needs certain standards of maintenance, sanitation, water, electricity, energy, power. Electricity crisis continues in Gaza. It just goes on and on. The Gaza Strip has been considered several times to be the most densely populated and one of the poorest places on Earth. Unemployment among young people is 67%. We can go on and on here. Medical supplies sorely lacking. Israel's military campaign last year damaged 15 of Gaza's 27 hospitals and damaged or destroyed 43 of its 110 primary health care facilities, none of which have been repaired or rebuilt because of the ban on construction materials. Infant mortality rate is rising. Watery diarrhea, acute bloody diarrhea, viral hepatitis are the major causes of morbidity among reportable infectious diseases of these children in Gaza. It goes on and on. If you are not aware of what the Israelis have done and continue to do to the people of Gaza, and there is no equivalence here. There is no equivalence. The Israeli attack last year, year and a half ago, against the people of Gaza because of a few poorly built rockets that exploded across the border into Israeli territory. And the result was 1,500 dead Palestinians in Gaza. God knows how many injured. I said then, and I'll say it again, what Israel has done to Gaza City is what the Nazis did to the Warsaw Ghetto. There's more on this when we come back. Much more. Stay with us.
Every night is
It is 21 past the hour. The silence from American media regarding this horror that was visited on several hundred people as they tried to bring humanitarian aid to the people of Gaza. The silence from the American media has been deafening. Not unexpected, but still deafening. It's astonishing to me. If Iran had attacked this ship, if Greece had attacked this ship, if Nigeria had attacked this ship, the outcry by the editorial writers and the commentators and the anchor people in this country would have been ongoing and overwhelming. This was an act of murder on the high seas. This is incredible. To attack an unarmed ship loaded with civilians and Israelis, I might add. There were Israeli citizens on board this boat. There were Turks. There were Palestinians. There were Americans. This was an international attempt to come to the relief, to a slight degree, of the people of Gaza and, of course, to focus attention on what the Israelis are doing to these people and have done for the past half century, but especially the past 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years. There is not an American alive who would trade places with a Palestinian living in Gaza. I don't care how pro-Israel you are. I don't care how pro-Palestinian you are. I don't care how much neutrality you claim. An act of war to land specially trained combat teams on the deck of a ship in international waters with the sole intention of intercepting that ship and stopping it from continuing on its way. Somebody might make the argument of, Israel declared a blockade. In the first place, there is no Palestinian state, so the blockade is against the Palestinian people. How do you do that? How do you declare a naval blockade against a group of people? There is no Palestine. It doesn't exist as a nation state. So how does Israel declare a certain part of a disputed border area to be under a blockade? And then before this flotilla of boats gets past or into the blockade area, Israel launches an attack. And the President of the United States and his chief spokesman, Robert Gibbs, act as though they don't have a clue as to what's going on. Oh, what happened? Something happened? Something happened in the Mediterranean? Really? What? This never stops. Never. And again, to believe that another country, Israel, has such absolute control over reactions in this country where it concerns their acts of atrocity against another people is just mind-boggling to me. It has been for 25 years. I can't get my mind around why we allow this to happen. We allow a people to be put into the pit of genocide. Oh, no, there are no death camps, per se, run by the Israelis in the occupied territories. There are no gas chambers. What they are doing to the Palestinians is a slow, horrific death. Nobody says anything. Nobody says anything. Netanyahu, I can't believe that someone like Netanyahu is a leader of a country that claims to be a democracy, even though it is not. It is a it is built on theocratic principles, but it claims to be a democracy, and they have a leader like Netanyahu. When we come back from this break, we're going to play a few Q&As from the press briefing today where White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs does an incredible impression of Ari Fleischer. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Ready to make nice, it's Mike Malloy.
It is 26 minutes before the hour. All right, to the press briefing today, where White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs did a pretty good imitation of Ari Fleischer at the podium, hedging all the questions about the official administration position toward the Israeli attack on the Gaza aid flotilla. Listen.
In light of what happened with the Gaza aid flotilla, is the president considering at least backing international calls to lift the blockade on the Gaza Strip by the Israeli forces?
Well, look, obviously, as we have said before, we are concerned about the humanitarian situation in Gaza, and continue to work with the Israelis and international partners in order to improve those conditions. And as the UN Security Council statement says, obviously it's an untenable situation.
Should the blockade be lifted?
Again, we're working with those to improve to improve.
You bastard!
The humanitarian conditions. I do think it's helpful to understand that this is a blockade of. To not allow weapons to get into the hands of Hamas.
Humanitarian aid.
And we have said that, well, I'll just leave it at that.
You know, this is like Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. Yeah, what's your proof? Oh, we know he has them, but nobody can find them. Well, we know he has them, so we're going to invade and kill tens of thousands of people. The humanitarian aid flotilla was carrying guns, was carrying weapons to Hamas. Even though it was inspected by the Turks before it left that country, even though on board were Israeli parliamentarians, Israeli citizens, Israeli peace advocates, as well as people from the United States, people from Turkey. But the story, you see, is out there, and Robert Gibbs is going to do nothing, absolutely nothing, to squelch it. He says, I do think it's helpful to understand that this is a blockade of to not allow weapons to get into the hands of Hamas. And Helen Thomas tried to get a question, shouldn't humanitarian aid? He cut her off. And we have said that. Well, I'll just leave it at that. Of course you'll leave it at that. Here he is again.
Is the president concerned at all that after all his work to repair relations between the U.S. and the Muslim world, that a situation like this destroys it in overnight?
The U.S. relationship with the Muslim
world? U.S. relationship with the Muslim world by standing so steadfastly with Israel?
No, again, I would point you to, I think it was a pretty clear statement by the international community that the United States...
I mean, it condemns acts that were taken that led to the loss of life, but it doesn't say whose acts. It could have been the flotilla's acts, or it could have been the IDF's acts. It's not clear from that statement.
Well, I think our opinion is this is a pretty clear statement, and obviously...
Okay. Whose acts are you talking about in that statement? Is it the IDF, or is it the...
Again, we're talking about a series of facts that will be determined by an appropriate investigation, as I just said.
Okay, so there's no specificity as to whose acts it's condemning.
Well, it may be of information as to exactly how this went down that the rest of the international community may not be completely clear on, Jake. But again, I'm saying,
if you don't know what happened,
we can play circular ball all day long, Jake. Obviously, we condemn the loss of life and we regret it deeply.
Yeah, we always do, don't we? Huh? Or at least we always make that statement, or our official spokespeople make that statement. Well, we condemn the loss of life. We condemn actions on both sides of this issue. But why is the equivalency always applied here? You know, Hamas being an occupied area of what the Palestinians consider to be their country have a moral obligation to resist the occupier, just as we would were we occupied, just as any country, once it becomes occupied by an invader, as the Palestinians see what happened to their country starting in the 40s and culminating with the establishment of a complete fiction, the State of Israel. Even observant Israeli Jews, Orthodox, condemn the establishment of the state. That is for the Messiah to perform. So a completely fictive act around which thousands of Palestinians have been butchered and hundreds of Israelis, so-called, have died. But in Gaza, that is supposed to be a part of this eventual Palestinian state, although it is not contiguous with the West Bank territories at all. It's an isolated section of 1.5 million people that just sits there. Nobody on earth comes to the defense outside the Muslim world of the Palestinians, especially not the Gazans. With notable exceptions, of course. I mean, individuals. I'm talking about countries. I'm talking about diplomats. I'm talking about people who have power. Nobody. Helen Thomas starts this one.
Her initial reaction to this flotilla massacre, deliberate massacre, an international crime, was pitiful. What do you mean you regret when something should be so strongly condemned? And if any other nation in the world had done it, we would have been up in arms. Well, what is this sacrosanct Iron Clan relationship where a country that deliberately kills people and boycotts, and we aid and abet the boycott?
Look, I think the initial reaction regretted the loss of life as we tried and still continue to try to gather the relevant... Nothing can bring them back, Helen. We know that for sure. Because I think if you could, that wouldn't be up for debate. We believe that a credible and transparent investigation has to look into the facts. And as I said earlier, we're open to international participation in that investigation.
Why did you think of it so late?
Why do we think of?
Why didn't you initially condemn it?
Again, I think the statements that we released speak directly to that.
The United States, part of our delegation to the United Nations, has suggested strongly that Israel investigate itself. More from that press briefing.
Recognizing you're in fact-ascertaining mode, let's take some facts, not a dispute. The ship was boarded in international waters. So do you think Israel violated international law in doing that?
I have not asked anybody. I'm not an international law expert.
Does the administration
I don't know the answer to that.
Was it appropriate, do you think, does the administration think, for a humanitarian ship to attempt to break a blockade?
Look, I'm not going to get into the international law implications of all this, Savannah. I think the administration and the international community has spoken on the actions and look forward to a full accounting of the facts.
Would you concede that the notion of boarding a vessel in order to stop it from breaking the blockade was poorly conceived?
Savannah, you're asking me to be I am many things. I am not an international law expert, and I am not a military tactician. I serve some roles, but neither. I've never been in a meeting where I've been asked my opinion on either international law. I don't have anything to add.
I've never been in such a meeting either. Have you, gentle listener, where you were asked your opinion on international law where it concerns boarding a non-military vessel in international waters with the expressed intention of stopping its journey and then murdering 10 people on board and wounding 50 more? When the objective of that boat and the flotilla of boats was to deliver humanitarian aid to people who are being besieged, not a nation. There is no nation of Gaza. There is no nation of Palestine. Who in the hell, then, has Israel decided to blockade? You tell me. And a blockade itself is in violation of Geneva Conventions, international law. And what do we do? What does the United States do? Nothing. Nothing. We'll be right back.
In my head, not really hearing what you said. Oh no, put an ear to the ground, put the words in my mouth. All the sideways looks never mattered until now. It's a long ride, it's a downside, it's what it's all about. And I think that you better sit this out in the big light that solves everything. It's hanging upon.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Coming up after the break, the top of the hour, Bill Press is going to join us for a few minutes. He has a new book out, and we're going to chat with him about that. As far as running blockades, isn't that what Rhett Butler was doing in Gone with the Wind? Didn't he run Yankee blockades? What about Jean Lafitte during the American Revolution? But what happened in international waters by the government, ordered by the government of Israel, is a crime, purely and simply. After a 12-hour-long emergency meeting that was convened at the insistence of Turkey, Lebanon, and the Palestinian people, It's another reason they always call them the Palestinian people, because they don't have a state. They don't have a nation. Palestinians, a couple that I know here in Atlanta, travel on Lebanese passports because there is no country. Anyway, the Security Council early this morning issued a statement that, quote, condemns those acts which resulted in the loss of at least 10 civilians and many wounded, end quote, after Israeli commandos attacked this Mercy ships. The Security Council called for a prompt investigation, and in a key bit of diplomatic ambiguity, the United States asserted that the statement mandates a domestic probe on the part of Israel. In other words, we are saying Israel should investigate itself. The language of the text of the Security Council seems designed to lend itself to different interpretations. The statement said, quote, the Security Council took note of the statement of the UN Secretary General on the need to have a full investigation into the matter, and it calls for a prompt, impartial, credible, and transparent investigation conforming to international standards, end quote. Speaking after the statement, the U.S. Deputy Envoy to the UN, Alexander Wolf, underlined that the Obama administration only supported investigations carried out by Israel. Mr. Wolf told reporters, quote, the text reads pretty clearly to me. The Secretary General calls for a full investigation. We believe that the Israelis can do a full investigation, end quote. Several UN member states blasted Israel for the loss of life aboard the Turkish ship Mavi Marmara, which was leading the flotilla in the international waters of the Mediterranean. The Turkish foreign minister described the killings as, quote, murder conducted by a state, end quote, and asked Israel for an apology. Israel contested the idea that the aid convoy was on a humanitarian mission. The Israeli Dan Carman, deputy head of Israel's mission to the UN, said, quote, they are not peace activists. They are not messengers of goodwill. They cynically use a humanitarian platform to send a message of hate and to implement violence. Really? Is that what the flotilla was about? A message of hate. Senior UN official for political affairs told the Security Council, quote, that today's bloodshed would have been avoided if repeated calls on Israel to end the counterproductive and unacceptable blockade of Gaza had been heeded. It just goes on and on, doesn't it? Paul Craig Roberts, former Reagan administration official, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, former editor of Wall Street Journal, had a lengthy statement entitled America's Complicity in Evil. The lead says, as I write, at 5 p.m. on Monday, May 31st, all day has passed since early morning reports of the Israeli commando attack on the unarmed ships carrying humanitarian aid to Gaza. And there has been no response from President Obama except to say that he needed to learn, quote, all the facts about this morning's tragic events, end quote, and that Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu had canceled his plans to meet with him at the White House. Thus has Obama made America complicit once again in Israel's barbaric war crimes. Just as the U.S. Congress voted to deep six Judge Goldstone's report on Israel's war crimes committed in Israel's January 2009 invasion of Gaza, Obama has deep sixed Israel's latest act of barbarism by pretending that he doesn't know what happened. No one in the world will believe that Israel attacked ships in international waters carrying Israeli citizens, a Nobel laureate, elected politicians, and noted humanitarians bringing medicine and building materials to Palestinians in Gaza who've been living in the rubble of their homes since January 2009 without first clearing the crime with its American protector. Without America's protection, Israel could not exist. No one in the world will believe that America's spy apparatus did not detect the movement of the Israeli attack force toward the aid ships in international waters in an act of piracy, killing 20, wounding 50, and kidnapping the rest. Obama's pretense at ignorance confirms his complicity. Once again, the U.S. government has permitted the Israeli state to murder good people known for their moral conscience. The Israeli state has declared that anyone with a moral conscience is an enemy of Israel. And every American president except Eisenhower and Carter has agreed. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. Bill Press is kind of, sort of, part of this family of loosely put together by our stepdad. That would be Ron Hartenbaum. Most people who have been tuned into American media, across the spectrum, any time in the last 20 years is familiar with Bill Press. Hey, Bill.
Mike, how you doing?
Oh, what happened there? Lightning struck.
So, I don't know. So I have to. Are you up this late every night?
We're only an hour into the program. We have two more hours of fun and frivolity to do here, Bill.
You know me. I'm the early morning guy. So,
I know. Like, I'm not going to keep you very long.
But, no. It's just so weird, you know, to have a got like burning the candle at both ends. Anyhow, good to talk to you, my man.
Yeah, it is,
my friend. I haven't seen you in a while.
I understand you're going to be right up the road here in Asheville, North Carolina, pretty soon.
Stephanie Miller and I, are you ready for that?
Oh, my God.
We are invading Asheville this weekend.
You know, I tried to picture that. I have friends who live in Asheville. They're potters. they make pottery.
Yeah.
And there are people up there who make earrings. And I just can't imagine you and Stephanie loose in Asheville. It's a quiet town, Bill. it's in the Smoky Mountains. It's pretty laid back.
It's a beautiful town. I was there. I've been there once, and yeah, but it's sort of a, you're right, laid back, artsy, craftsy, kind of place, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not sure it's ready for Stephanie Miller and Bill Press both in the same weekend.
it's a little dodgy. Well, the reason Bill's going to be there is promoting his book Toxic Talk. And obviously, I haven't read it yet. I don't think anyone has. Is it out?
It's been out just a week, actually.
And, just a week.
You should have a copy. I say some really nice things in the book about you.
Oh, really?
Because I love your work and have loved, you know, for a long time.
Well, I'd love to get it because I put a lot of credence, and this shows perhaps my functional illiteracy, but I put a lot of credence on a title of a book.
Yeah.
And Toxic Talk to me is like, oh, Jesus, I've got to read that, you know, because I know what you're talking about. And I know what you're talking about. And it's pretty vile.
Well, you know, it is. And let me tell you, I mean, I'm not an altar boy, right? I'm the first one to admit it. And I might add, neither are you.
And that's very true.
Yeah. And, you know, and I've made a living at political debate. I mean, for a good number of years now on radio, on television. And I love it. I mean, I love it. The tougher, the harder hitting, you know, the better. But what we hear today from these jerks on the right, you know, more and more of them, is not good debate, honest debate on the issues or differences of opinion. It's just vile, ugly name-calling with no purpose other than to, you know, call names. And, I mean, I think the master practitioners are Glenn Beck. I think Michael Savage is the worst of all. But Hannity and Limbaugh and the rest. And, you know, there are people out there who believe this crap.
You know, as much as I do not like Pat Buchanan's positions on so many issues, when you and he did Crossfire on CNN, it still it had an element of if not mutual respect, at least enough respect where the ideas might be challenged. But I don't think I ever heard you try to eviscerate him, and he never came at you with a knife either.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because that is absolutely true. And we talked about that. You know, when I started, Pat was out running for president. This was 1996.
Right.
And so it was John Sununu. It was and Bob Novak. And then Mary Madeline came in. And then Pat came back. And, you know, we didn't hold back when it came to disagreeing on the issues.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you, I did that show for 6 years. Twice did it ever get personal. Twice. Mm-hmm. Once was with Sununu, and once was with Novak. Both, by the way, both on their part, not mine, right?
Right.
And we talked about it, and we said, hey, wait, no, this is wrong. They admitted it was wrong, went over the line. I called them on it, because we both knew what people wanted was a good, solid debate on the issues, and they didn't want it to get nasty and look mm-hmm. like we hated each other.
Well, those days are as cloudy and sepia-toned as a picture of your grandfather's Model A. I'll tell you, Bill, I mean, those days are long gone.
Absolutely.
I can legitimately be accused, and I'm willing to accept the accusation, of giving back as strongly and as in such an ugly way as the right-wingers do. And I know that you don't. I know that Stephanie doesn't. I know that Hartman doesn't. I know that Ed Schultz never did. But I will. And I guess the reason for it is I am just so enraged at what right-wing media has done in this country.
Yep, yep.
And I
what they get and what they get away with, right?
Without being answered. Without being answered.
No. Exactly. And there's no attempt at all to even get close to the truth. You know what I mean? They don't care. They don't care. They will tell whatever lie serves their purpose. And I have to tell you, Mike, because we're friends, right? But I go, now that I've just started to move around the country, right,
mm-hmm.
and talk about the book,
right.
And I, here's what I get, right? Oh, but Mike Malloy, he's as bad as any of them.
Oh, sure. Oh, I know.
Yeah. And so I'm always defending you, but here's the way I do it. And now tell me if I'm wrong, but I always say, yeah, you know what? I know Mike well, and he's colorful, and he says what he thinks. But it's not the whole purpose of his show, and it's not all the time. But what you hear from a Savage or a Mark Levin, Dominion, or a Neil Bortz,
right,
is just a steady stream of vitriol. There's no substance. There's no, you know, really discussing the issues or attempt to.
Right. Well, this is...
And that's the difference.
Yeah, and this conversation's certainly not supposed to be about me. But the only thing I can say is I don't lie. I will not tell lies, whereas Beck and Hannity and Limbaugh and Savage and Bortz will tell lies.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's the essential difference.
And by the way, the lie is the right where I talk about that in the book, too. I mean, these are deliberate lies. They're not just things where they say something and they have their facts wrong, right? Where maybe somebody had given them some bad research. They know exactly what the hell they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They know it's wrong. They say it anyway. And because they know, if they repeat it often enough and loud enough, people are going to believe them.
Given that you have a fairly stable and widespread platform, what prompted you to decide to write a book?
I just got pissed off at hearing this kind of talk and seeing the impact it was having on our, first of all, on our democracy, right? And on,
and
by the way, and on talk radio, which I really love. I mean, I've done a lot of TV and I've done talk radio, and I just love talk radio for the same reason you do. You know, it's such an immediate contact with people. And I see them debasing a medium that you and I both love. And I'll tell you something else, too, is I think it's not only repulsive, I think it's dangerous. You know, this nutcase from that CNN hired, Eric Erickson, who said if a census worker walked up on his porch, he'd pull his wife's shotgun on him, right?
Yeah, you and I both worked at CNN. What would prompt them to hire somebody like this?
You tell me.
I
can't figure it out.
I'll
tell you what.
Fox
I mean,
News Channel.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. No, that's what it is. They're looking for their own Glenn Beck. And so they just did a very un-CNN kind of thing by hiring this guy. So this week the FBI reports there have been 113 acts of violence committed against census workers. The most recent one is a woman who pulled a shotgun on a census worker in Yuba City, California. He calls the police. The police show up. She turns a shotgun on them, and they shot her dead. You know?
Jesus,
I can't prove there's any connection, but...
Well,
you can't tell me. There's some unhinged people out there, I'm convinced.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yes. What percentage of the U.S. population, Bill, would you think is unhinged? Half? And how many of those people listen to Beck and Hannity collectively and Limbaugh? Half again?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We're talking about 75 million people who are totally unhinged. Can you hold on?
Of course.
Just for a second, I want to do one more little segment with you. Stay right there. We're talking with Bill Press, whose book is called, or titled, Toxic Talk. If you happen to live in Asheville, North Carolina, or he's going to be all over the place, you've got to go get a copy and ask him to sign it. We'll be right back.
Back on the shoulder, pinned in the cold, down by the metal track. She saw it out shine, swore it a man, she'd never go back.
Flying Monkey Right. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. We're talking with Bill Press, whose new book is Toxic Talk. Who's the publisher, Bill?
Publisher is St. Martin's Press. And in the shameless plug, you mentioned getting a signed copy. The way to do that is to go to your website, Mike. People can get it at...
Oh, that's right. We had that ad, or that, ad put up today. That's right.
Yeah. So it can you can either get it at always at Amazon or local bookstore, but if you want a signed copy, go to your website and just tell us how you want it signed, and I'll do it and get it out right away.
I noticed that Bill Press Show, is it Bill Press Show or Bill Press Program? I just typed in BillPress.com and got to your site, and it has your itinerary, at least a bit of it, where you're going to be for these signings. That's going to be fun. I have to ask you, why is Stephanie going to be with you in Asheville? Is there anything you want to say on this program that, you know, Tipper and Al made a big announcement? No,
all I can tell you is that Carol's not going to be there.
Oh, yeah, well.
All right. So all I'm going to say.
All right. Well, I'll leave it alone then. I wanted to ask you I remember, almost, say 20 years ago, when I worked at radio here in Atlanta. This is after CNN, and I heard this guy on the radio, Rush Limbaugh, and I started listening a little bit, and I thought, well, you know, he's kind of funny. I don't like his politics, but he's kind of funny. What the hell happened to him?
You know, you are so right. I was telling this to somebody the other day. I followed, it's about the same time, maybe. I was at KFI in Los Angeles, okay?
Mm-hmm, right.
And I used to follow Rush, and I used to like to listen to him, right? Not that I agreed with anything he said, but I thought he was kind of funny. Some of his spoofs, you know, and the songs that he would have, and I always had the feeling that Rush would turn off his microphone once in a while and just kind of chuckle at something he had said. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I don't believe that anymore. I mean, I think I don't know what happened. Maybe success, because he certainly had success, you know, went to his head. But he certainly has become, you know, hardcore. But even to the point where I think Bill O'Reilly has kind of mellowed. You know, look at Fox, right? Now that they've got, I mean, Rush is still out there, but with Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck, Bill O'Reilly almost looks like the wise old uncle, right? It's not as bad as
you
once thought he was.
Maybe the crazy uncle you keep
crazy.
In the attic.
Yeah.
The one that you keep locked up at except at Thanksgiving.
Well, right. But he's not as virulent. And I mean, he even wrote an essay saying Barack Obama was a role model for fathers, you know, these days.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that didn't make him any friends on the right.
Well, probably.
But Rush is, you're right. Rush has just become hopeless, right? You know,
and his
a real
his,
ideologue.
Well, you know, these guys usually, I think every single one of them, Beck is so unhinged. I mean, I don't know what universe Glenn Beck lives in, but every one of them seems to be eaten up with this toxic narcissism. There he goes, the title for another book.
There, I like it.
But this toxic narcissism where you know, I used to have people 5-10 years ago say to me, do you really think Hannity believes that stuff? You really think Limbaugh believes that stuff? And my answer was, hell yes, of course they believe it. They are completely, they completely bought into their own nonsense to the point where I think Beck really believes that he's going to lead some kind of a revolution. And you do talk about this in the book, right?
Absolutely. I mean, again, I think Beck is the most dangerous. I think he's surpassed Rush Limbaugh in terms of his pull and his power, particularly because he's trying to do this political thing. Now, here's something. I don't know whether you've caught up with this. On the 28th of August, don't tell me how they ever got permission for this, Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin are holding a rally on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Now, you know, where Martin Luther King gave his I Have a Dream speech, Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin are giving a Let's Support the Troops rally, which they say they bill as nonpartisan, right?
Mm.
Rally.
Well, why doesn't
BS? And how would the Park Service give that nut, right? Access to that, to me, is a sacred site.
If they want to support the troops, both of them could go join the troops.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, what better way to support? I'm sure they'll find something for Sarah Palin to do. that's awful. I know. I'm going to burn in hell for all this stuff. But I don't care.
That's right. You'll have good company.
That's true. All right. Listen, I know you got to get up in the morning. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour break, which goes on interminably.
I know.
You're going to be in Seattle when I am, right?
I'm going to be in Asheville. Going to be in Seattle. I'm going to be in Chicago, Madison. It's all up on my website, BillPressShow.com. But it's an honor to join you in the late night show, and you know, give me a couple of years sleep, and maybe we could do it again.
All right, Bill. Hey, listen. Good luck with the tour, and good luck with the book. I can't wait to read it.
Thanks, Mike.
All right.
All right.
Take
good
care.
Night, man.
Take care. Bill Press. Go to BillPress.com. Just type that into your search engine; it'll come up. I think it's BillPressShow.com, but it doesn't matter. Just type in BillPress.com. Now get the book from MikeMalloy.com, because do we get anything for that, Kathy? Yeah, from his publisher? What do we get? A nickel? I don't have any idea. All right, time to stop laughing. Time to get all nasty and hateful again, and we'll do that right after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Looking for a lead. It is duty to a king or to a queen, protecting what he feels right, fights against wrong with his life. There's no profit in deceit. Honest men know that revenge does not taste sweet.
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Today, when Kathy and I were out and about doing errands, while Molly was at yoga camp, we listened to CNN and MSNBC via our Sirius radio in the car. And we listened to the weasel words coming out of American politicians as well as American media personalities. And one of the things that we Kathy and I were talking about, I don't remember this, but it happened during my lifetime, and that was the Berlin airlift, where we and the Brits staged this this airlift into Berlin because the Russians, our former allies, had surrounded Berlin, and West Berlin, of course, was under control of the U.S. government. Well, part of it, and our former enemies, the Germans, were starving. The Russians had erected a fence around the city. And regardless of what one thinks about the underlying motives or the secondary motives, the struggle between capitalism and communism, regardless of all that, the Berlin airlift, as Robert Fisk said today, I found out, was one of the great moments in the Cold War. Our soldiers and our airmen risked and gave their lives for the German civilian population that was literally starving to death. And as Robert Fisk said today, writing at the Independent of the UK, incredible, isn't it? In those days, our politicians took decisions, our leaders took decisions to save lives. Clement Attlee and Harry Truman knew that Berlin was important in moral and human as well as political terms. And today? Today it was people, ordinary people, Europeans, Americans, Holocaust survivors, yes, for heaven's sake, survivors of the Nazis who took the decision to go to Gaza because their politicians and their statesmen had failed them. Did you know that, gentle listener, that on board that Turkish ship were at least two Holocaust survivors who are citizens of Israel now? The Gaza war that resulted in this embargo, this refusal to allow anything in and anything out, the Gaza war of 2008-2009, 1,300 Palestinians were killed. And according to reports, all but about 200 of them were civilians, just slaughtered. Lebanon War of 2006, 1,000 dead. And the White House today, the Obama administration is working to understand the circumstances surrounding the tragedy. Not a single word of condemnation. As Fisk says, and that's it, 10 dead. Just another statistic to add to the Middle East toll. He writes, it's a fact. The fact is, ordinary people, activists, call them what you will, who now take decisions to change events. Our politicians are too spineless, too cowardly to take decisions to save lives. Why is this? Why didn't we hear courageous words from the new PM of Great Britain, Cameron, and Clegg, the liberal? Fisk writes, for it is a fact, is it not, that had European, and yes, the Turks are Europeans, are they not, had Europeans been gunned down by any other Middle Eastern army, there would have been waves of outrage. And what does this say about Israel? Isn't Turkey a close ally of Israel? Is this what the Turks can expect? Now, Israel's only ally in the Muslim world is saying this is a massacre. And Israel doesn't seem to care. There's more. But why bother? There is this, though. Irish humanitarian aid ship, the MV Rachel Corey. Remember her? 23-year-old U.S. peace activist Rachel Corey, who was crushed to death in 2003 by an American-built bulldozer operated by the IDF. So there's a ship, the MV Rachel Corey. It's still sailing for Gaza. It's Irish, sailing, I believe, under Irish registry. The Irish government has threatened Israel with, quote, the most serious consequences, end quote, if any Irish national captured or currently aboard an aid vessel is harmed. Brian Cowan, who is the leader of Ireland's government, said, quote, if any harm comes to any of our citizens, it will have serious consequences. It's according to the Irish Times. The Rachel Corey is reportedly due to arrive in Gaza tomorrow, according to the Irish Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Irish officials have demanded Israel let the boat pass unimpeded. And, of course, Ireland has long opposed Israel's military blockade of Palestine. Brian Cowan said, quote, the government has formally requested the Israeli government to allow the Irish-owned ship to be allowed to complete its journey unimpeded and discharge its humanitarian cargo in Gaza. The Rachel Corey is carrying medical equipment, wheelchairs, school supplies, and cement, a material Israel has banned in Hamas-ruled Gaza. That's according to the Seattle Post-Globe. Five Irish activists and five Malaysian activists were said to be on board the MV Rachel Corey. A message sent on behalf of the activists published by Global Research said, quote, in the names of our friends, we are more determined than ever to continue into Gaza with our humanitarian cargo and our support for the blockaded and suffering people of Gaza. We expect Israel to respond to the international condemnation of its violence by not impeding, by any means, the safe passage of the Rachel Corey. We appeal to the international community and the United Nations to continue to demand Israel our safe passage into Gaza. And the activist group Jewish Voice for Peace declared in an email to its supporters, quote, we still don't know the names of those who were killed or injured or where they are from. And we don't know the whereabouts or well-being of more than 400 activists still being held by Israel, end quote. This group demanded Israel release the activists without condition or charge, which, by the way, I think they have done. In response to this murder on the high seas, Egypt, and I can just see Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin swirling in their respective graves, Egypt announced it would open a portion of the border crossing into Palestine to allow in future shipments of humanitarian supplies. Egypt, for a certain amount of money annually, all these years, agreed to make peace, Egypt did, with Begin, with the Israelis. That was the peace agreement that Jimmy Carter brokered back in the late 70s. And ever since, Israel and Egypt have been the two largest recipients of U.S. foreign aid of in the world. I believe Colombia came in a close third. But Egypt and Israel have together sucked off tens of billions of dollars, if not hundreds of billions of dollars, since that peace agreement was signed. Not just in direct aid, but also in military aid. Israel claims the killings were the result of a provocation when they're armed to the teeth with Uzi. Paratroopers landed on board the ship in the middle of the night. Jesus, God. Well, so we'll see what happens to the Irish vessel. If you wake up in the morning with a report from CNN or whatever garbagey cable news company attuned to that says the Irish ship MV, does that stand for Mercy Vessel? I don't know. MV Rachel Corrie has been attacked. One idea as to why this occurred may be found in a BBC broadcast of May 17th. Iran had signed an agreement to send uranium for enrichment to Turkey. So these ships were sailing, I believe, if not all of them, certainly the lead vessel was sailing under the Turkish flag. More in a minute. Stay with us.
More Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. And as usual, the members of Congress that you would not expect, I guess you would expect, to collapse when the evil eye of Israel sweeps across the House or the Senate after an incident like this. As you would expect, they are all collapsing. Eric Cantor, who is the... The Republican whip in the House. He is urging Obama to stand up more forcefully for Israel against criticism of its attack. Cantor, of course, is Jewish. He was the first one out of the gate urging Obama to veto any UN resolution condemning Israel. This is what he said, Eric Cantor, quote, "The events of the last 48 hours are tragic and serve as the latest warning sign that all is not well in the Middle East. As information continues to filter in, I urge the president and his administration to continue to gather all the facts and, if necessary, to veto any biased UN resolution reining in Israel's right to defend itself." That's how this is. That's how it's always presented, right? Before predictably rushing, this is Cantor's statement goes on, before predictably rushing to level hyperbolic accusations at Israel, it's important for the United Nations to consider all the facts surrounding this incident. The reality is, he's got the facts, I see. The reality is that the so-called humanitarian aid flotilla steered into an internationally recognized Israeli-Egyptian military blockade of Gaza in an effort to provoke Israel. What's that old joke about the cop that said, yeah, I arrested the guy and he kept slamming his head into my nightstick? Okay, that's Eric Cantor, but what about your big hero, Anthony Weiner? Huh? Democrats in Congress are going to stand solidly against the Palestinians. They always do, right? Anthony Weiner of New York, who was all over television during the healthcare debate, defending Obama, defending this, right? Yeah, Anthony Weiner. Today, he strongly defended Israel's move in an interview, blaming the bloodshed on Turkey and the activists for slamming their heads against the cop's nightstick. Weiner, who is one of Israel's leading allies in Congress, said, quote, this is from the Washington, Greg Sargent's Washington Post blog. Weiner said, this was about instigating an altercation and they succeeded. He's referring to the people trying to deliver humanitarian aid. He insisted that the activists piloting the flotilla were offered other alternatives by Israel, such as docking the ship and transporting the supplies to Gaza by land. Wiener continued, quote, if you want to instigate a conflict with the Israeli Navy, it isn't hard to do. They were offered alternatives. Instead, they chose to sail into the teeth of an internationally recognized blockade, end quote. Internationally recognized by whom? Mr. Wiener? Pushed on whether the Israeli response, which killed 10, was disproportionate, Wiener wouldn't acknowledge it. He said, quote, it's always easy to criticize the response to a hostile act. But for a week, at least, the Israelis were trying to prevent this altercation, end quote. Wiener added that the Israelis had been, quote, set upon, end quote. Wiener said, speaking of the Israeli commandos, quote, it's very easy now to say they should have come in using water cannons and harsh language, end quote. You sarcastic son of a bitch. People are dead. Oh, never mind. What difference does it make? And when Greg Sargent asked Wiener whether it was legit for the activists to use the flotilla to draw global attention to the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, Wiener suggested that wasn't the real motive. Wiener said, quote, if they were truly interested in providing aid, there were ways. This was about instigating an altercation, and they succeeded, end quote. Wiener again turned the blame on Turkey and the activists. He said, quote, anything that Israel does would create an international outcry. This entire effort was intended to create an international outcry, end quote. So that's how that goes. And I will guarantee you that you will not hear. You will, if you do, send me a link, send me something. You will not hear a liberal so-called talk show host in America condemning what Israel did on Monday. You will not hear it. And you damn sure are not going to hear a cold, right-to-the-wall condemnation in the U.S. Congress. You will not hear it. And if you still have any kind of mind left after what has occurred in this country for the past 20 years, if you have any shred of intelligence left, you've got to ask yourself, why? Why is there no condemnation by the so-called liberals and progressives and Democrats and yada yada? The Republicans want death and blood. The Christian right wants death and blood because that's going to make their Savior just clap his hands in glee and return. But if you have any ability left to question anything that is fed to us every single day, then do this. Just do this. Ask yourself why. No one in this country condemns Israel no matter what it does. Ever. And if you come up with a good working answer, let me know. I sometimes feel like my ass is hanging out here all by itself where it concerns this issue. I know that's not true, and I'm not trying to be paranoid. But I'm still waiting to hear full-throated condemnation with no equivocation, no BS about what happened this time or the time before or the time before that.
Oh, well, Mike, what about the two Israeli soldiers that were killed by a rocket fired from Gaza?
Yeah, what about that?
Today, for the love that's deep inside is now still the same. how we make together. It's the music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now. Feel alive. Listen to the tide slowly turning. Wash your heart away.
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Can you hear me now? 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. To add insult to injury, if you want to put it that way, in the Jerusalem Post, a Navy spokesman for the Israeli Navy says next time we'll use more force. The Navy is preparing for expected arrival of 2 more activist ships. And the Jerusalem Post puts it this way. Israel will use more aggressive force in the future to prevent ships from breaking the sea blockade on the Gaza Strip, a top Navy commander told the Jerusalem Post on Tuesday. The officer said, quote, "We boarded the ship and were attacked as if it was a war." Jesus God. He went on, "That will mean that we will have to come prepared in the future as if it was a war." I see. The Uzis in the sidearms you guys were carrying was because they thought it was a fishing vessel. Okay. The anonymous comment came the day after the Israeli Navy raided a flotilla of international aid ships headed to the Strip. 9 activists were killed. Dozens were injured. The flotilla, which arrived late Sunday night, was comprised of 6 ships, and another 2 ships, including the Rachel Corrie, were expected to attempt to enter Israeli waters in the coming days. Greta Berlin of the Free Gaza Movement said earlier Tuesday that a cargo boat was already on the way to challenge Israel's blockade of the Gaza Strip. A second boat carrying about 3 dozen passengers was expected to join the first, she added. Okay. So the way to do it, just continue to send boatload after boatload of people trying to aid the Palestinians. You know, you can make the argument that there is no point in even discussing this. Because it doesn't, nothing changes in that situation. Nothing has changed since the 40s, 1940s. Paul Craig Roberts, again, I had started this earlier. He goes on to say today, writing at, I think he wrote this at Common Dreams, or not Common Dreams, but Alexander Coburn said, I don't know. I don't know where I got this. Anyway, Paul Craig Roberts, former Reagan administration official and editor of the Wall Street Journal. The Israeli story, continuing here, preposterous as always, is that the humanitarians on one of the ships took 2 pistols from Israeli commandos, highly trained troops armed with automatic weapons, and fired on the attack force. The Israeli government claims that the commandos' response, 70 casualties at last reporting, was justified self-defense. Israel was innocent. Israel did not do anything except drop commandos aboard from helicopters in order to intercept an arms shipment to Gazans being brought in by ships manned by terrorists. Many Christian evangelicals, brainwashed by their pastors that it is God's will for Americans to protect Israel, will believe the Israeli story, especially when it is unlikely they will ever hear any other. Conservative Americans, especially on Memorial Day, when they are celebrating feats of American arms, will admire Israel for its toughness. Here in North Georgia, where I am at the moment, I have heard several say admiringly, "Them Israelis, they don't put up with nothing." That's pretty much how we talk down here, Mr. Roberts. It is. Paul Craig Roberts goes on, he says, conservative Americans want the U.S. to be like Israel. They do not understand, conservative Americans, why the U.S. doesn't stop pissing around after 9 years and just go ahead and defeat the Taliban in Afghanistan. They don't understand why the U.S. didn't defeat whoever was opposing American forces in Iraq. It is likely that Americans will accept Israeli propagandist Mark Regev's story that Israelis were met by deadly fire when they tried to intercept an arms shipment to Palestinian terrorists from a radical Turkish Islamist organization hiding under the cover of humanitarian aid. Americans will never hear from U.S. media that Turkey's Prime Minister Erdogan declared that the aid ships were carefully inspected before departure from Turkey and that there were no terrorists or arms aboard. Turkey's prime minister said, quote, "I want to say to the world, to the heads of state and the governments, that these boats that left from Turkey and other countries were checked in a strict way under the framework of the rules of international navigation and were loaded only with humanitarian aid," end quote. Turkey is a U.S. ally, a member of NATO. Well, gosh, Mr. Paul Craig Roberts, Israel attacked a NATO ally. Attack on one is attack on all. Or something like that. Turkey's cooperation, Roberts writes, is important to America's plan for world hegemony. That's a great sentence. Erdogan must wonder about the military, about the morality of Israel's American protector. According to a report at antiwar.com, the Turkish government declared that, quote, "future ships will be dispatched with a military escort so as to prevent future Israeli attacks," end quote. Will the CIA now assassinate Erdogan or pay the Turkish military to overthrow him? Murat Murkan, head of Turkey's Foreign Relations Committee, said that Israel's claim there were terrorists aboard the aid ships was Israel's way of covering up its crime. Murkan declared, quote, "any allegation that the members of this ship is attached to Al-Qaeda is a big lie because there are Israeli civilians, Israeli authorities, Israeli parliamentarians on board the ship," end quote. Paul Craig Roberts concludes by saying the criminal Israeli state does not deny its act of piracy. Israeli military spokeswoman Avital Leibovich confirmed that the attack took place in international waters. She said, quote, "this happened in waters outside of Israel territory, but we have the right to defend ourselves," end quote. Americans and their Western European puppet states and the puppet state in Canada will be persuaded by the servile media to buy the story fabricated by Israeli propaganda that the humanitarian aid ships were manned by terrorists bringing weapons to the Palestinians in Gaza and that the terrorists posing as humanitarians attacked the force of Israeli commandos with two pistols, clubs, and knives. Many Americans will swallow this story without a hiccup. Paul Craig Roberts. Counterpunch. I believe this is where I saw this. He was an editor of the Wall Street Journal and assistant secretary of the U.S. Treasury during the Reagan years. This is what makes a lot of Democrats schizophrenic when you have somebody like Anthony Weiner, who was so outspoken. You notice that, and I'm not saying anything negative about my friend Rachel Maddow or somebody I don't know, Keith Olbermann. But you notice how around this issue of what happened to the Palestinian or to the aid ships, that neither Rachel, as far as I know, nor Olbermann, as far as I know, invited Anthony Weiner on to talk about this issue. Huh? We'll be right back. Looking like the world's gone just a little crazy. And I know it can be all of them and just not me. Yeah. So I guess I'm going just a little crazy.
time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I got an email here from Barry about Jonathan Tessini. Do you know who he is? He is mounting a challenge. I think he's still in the running against Kirsten. Is it Kirsten or Kristen Gillibrand, the current Democratic senator in New York? I guess it's Kirsten. He also ran against Hillary Rodham Clinton back in, 2000? I think it was 2000. No, 2006. He ran against Clinton. He is Jewish. He was born in Houston, but he spent much of his late childhood in Israel. His father was born in Palestine and fought in the Haganah, Israel's pre-state army. But Tessini issued this statement. Thanks to Barry for sending this in. He writes, beyond the obvious condemnation of the Israeli attack in international waters on the flotilla of boats carrying humanitarian aid to Gaza, I want to focus very clearly on this fact. Our country, the U.S., bears a heavy responsibility for the deaths of at least 10 people, people whose one goal was to deliver basic supplies to a population that has endured a crushing blockade. The truth is that those deaths could have been avoided had the political leadership of the United States ended our country's failed policy of refusing to act to end the Gaza blockade, refusing to demand from Israel that it negotiate seriously an end to the occupation, refusing to act decisively when Israel did not abide by basic international standards of law, and effectively continuing a one-sided policy that gave Israel a green light for policies that cleared a path that inevitably leads to attacks as the one that just happened. For years, the U.S. has had ample opportunity to change its one-sided policy, which has resulted in the continued warfare, occupation, misery, and death of Palestinians and Israelis. Indeed, had we acted properly just 2 months ago, the deaths of the people on the flotilla might have been avoided. In March, the Israeli government approved the building of 1,600 new homes in East Jerusalem, a decision by the Israeli government that was counterproductive, done in bad faith, and sent a signal that the Israeli government was not serious about reaching a comprehensive peace agreement in the Middle East, which must result in the creation of an independent, viable Palestinian state for any peace agreement to be long-lasting. End of quote from Jonathan Tessini. And Barry writes, I'm sure Marcy Winograd also has something to say, but I have not heard it yet. Both Tessini and Winograd, as I'm sure you know, are American Jews. So there are voices out there, mine as well, Barry writes. There is no excuse for the wanton, nearly random, and ultimately incompetent and self-damaging action of the IDF under the direction of the Likud and their continued assault on the Palestinian people. It doesn't make sense. These actions are stupid and counterproductive, even if Israeli security is supposedly the, quote, goal, end quote. They remind me more and more of the gross incompetence of the Bush-Cheney administration. Barry. Well, it was just heartbreaking on several levels. First of all, the deaths of 9, 10, depending on who you want to believe, people, they possibly will be more deaths because 60 or 70 people were injured in the gunfire. And the immediate spinning of the story, immediate. Yes, the activists, let's call them that. Nah, the peace activists, including Holocaust survivors, for God's sake. Took videos, cell phone videos, handheld camera videos. But so did the Israeli soldiers. Why would they be videotaping their own action against people that they considered to be terrorists, violating their sovereignty? Unless it was to construct some kind of a narrative. The Israelis constructed a narrative to try to prove that the peace activists were in the wrong. There was some video, I believe, on CNN, MSNBC, of what was on board the ship that was attacked. There was no weaponry. There was medicine. There were kids' toys. There were wheelchairs. There was cement. There was construction material. You tired of this? You want me to go on to something else? Okay. When we come back from the break, three quick emails, then we'll move on. For tonight, I'm sure that this is a topic that is going to get revisited on this program. Stay with us.
Salam shalom, peace, salam shalom, peace, salam shalom, peace, salam shalom. We believe in 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 peace, salam shalom. We will work for peace.
Israel says, isn't a mouse senior militant? And Israel sent four choppers in flames and gold, tis wide open, and it killed his wife and his 3-year-old child, leaving only a blackened skeleton.
It's about 25 before the hour. Marcy Winograd has issued a statement, and it was Marcy Winograd is an American Jew. Norman Solomon is an American Jew. Norman Solomon, writing at Common Dreams, pointed out the difference between Marcy Winograd's statement and the statement of her opponent, Jane Harman. Jane Harman would abide by Israel no matter what the state of Israel did, because that's where she gets a lot of her funding. Marcy Winograd, who happens to be Jewish, issued the following statement, quote, I suspect the murders were committed as a warning to others who might want to bring humanitarian aid to Gaza. Ironically, the killings are bound to heighten awareness about the brutal blockade and to increase pressure to end the imprisonment of over 1 million people in Gaza. She added, violence begets violence, hatred begets hatred. Enough. We must stop this and adhere to the laws that have been established by the international community. Working for peace and human rights for all is the only way forward. As a Jewish woman of conscience, I invite my opponent, Jane Harman, another Jewish woman, and all of Congress to join me in denouncing this kind of barbaric violence, demanding an end to the blockade, and seeking an international investigation into these murders. I recommit myself to working toward a true, just, and lasting peace. Marcy Winograd is quoted by Norman Solomon at Common Dreams today. Jan Bauman. Oops, I'm sorry. I usually don't give last names. Who's also Jewish, wrote, Mike, I just returned from a demonstration from the Israeli consulate in San Francisco where at least 400 people gathered to protest the latest Israeli crime against humanity. Many of us are Jewish, saying that what Israel does is not in our name. Across the street were a handful of Israel supporters with their Israeli flags and signs. While one person held a sign saying Israel wants peace, just next to her were two Zionists whose signs read, until all of Gaza is destroyed, the job is not done. Another one said, rid the world of Islam. It wasn't hard to know what the reaction would have been had the signs held by those who opposed what Israel had done read, "Until all of Israel is destroyed, the job is not done," or "Rid the world of Judaism." There were no such signs on the pro-Palestinian side. When I came home, I found an email awaiting regarding the fate of some of the folks from the Bay Area who attempted to bring much-needed aid to Gaza. Huwaida Araf, who has long been involved with the Palestinian cause, was tossed out of a police car, hit her head, and woke up in a hospital. Another activist, a man I know in his 60s, silently refused to follow Israeli orders, and so he was beaten. He has been locked in a windowless room with the captain of the ship. Mike, this is only the latest in the crimes that Israel has committed since becoming a state. As a Jewish American, I am shamed, not only by Israel, but by my country that caters to Israel no matter what it does. I'm afraid that Israel and the Israeli lobby in this country have our country by the neck. I am sickened. Reg, who is also Jewish, I believe, at tvnewslies.org. A reminder about Anthony Weiner, she writes, who is my representative in Congress, also is a strong supporter of the invasion of Iraq. In the run-up to the war, I met with Weiner as part of a group of anti-war activists who tried to plead our case to him. He was rude, surly, arrogant, and totally dismissive of our plea because he felt that Iraq was a threat to Israel. I personally had a rather angry exchange with him about the consequences of the innocent civilians of Iraq, and his response to me was to walk out of the room. No matter, as Schumer's protege, Weiner is assured of re-election as long as he wants it. No one can unseat him, and anyone who might in the future will be a clone. As I said in an earlier email to you, no exit. Gorilla Monk writes, Mike, if the Obama administration is not going to condemn the act of piracy, terrorism, and slaughter of unarmed civilians that Israel committed in international waters this weekend, then what hope can we have of his going after BP or any other crime or corruption? The Bush administration at least made the occasional effort to pretend they cared. Where is the outrage? Where are the protests? Where are the voices of revolution and opposition? Where are all the John Lennons and Howard Zinns? Where are all the protest songs? Is this entire country so numb from all the antidepressants and so distracted with new gadgets and TV shows that we're too comfortably numb to care anymore? I'm getting worried, Mike, really worried. And all that keeps going through my head is Marvin Gaye's voice asking, what's going on? Kathy in Maine writes, Mike, even President Jimmy Carter was vilified by most of the Western press when he wrote a book about the plight of the Palestinians at the hands of the Israelis. We can't seem to even open a conversation about what Israel is doing without being called anti-Semitic. Until we can see that both sides have done wrong and open a real and thoughtful conversation, Israel will never be held accountable for its oppression of the Palestinian people. Even today, the only tape seen on most television news was a few minutes of the flotilla people attacking the Israeli soldiers. Still haven't seen the tape of the Israelis opening fire on unarmed aid activists. It just goes on with no end or possibility of peace in sight. Very sad. Kathy in Maine. And John in Raleigh writes, Mike, even the story in Tuesday's New York Times struck me as too brief, lacking in detail and lacking in reaction from around the world, except for a sidebar about the relationship between Turkey and Israel would be likely to suffer. I didn't even turn on television today, nor did I listen to NPR because I knew what I'd find. Someplace on a blog or alternative radio, I learned that Obama only said that he, quote, didn't know all the facts, end quote. And tonight it dawned on me. If Obama can look past what Israel did, he's capable of looking past our own nation's problems, too. I'd use the word sociopath, but maybe that is too strong a judgment to make. I have to hand it to Obama for being able to look right in an obvious situation and not see anything that he needs to do. It's a gift. Still angry, John in Raleigh. It's so sad, I think. I really do. I mean, it's sad to think how the moral authority, and the moral clarity of so many Jews, and if that is a prejudice statement or a bigoted statement, okay, I'll accept that. I'm the first one to say when somebody says, well, I really like black people, I'm the first one to say, well, that's a racist statement. But I have spent a great deal of time reading Jewish philosophers, Jewish scholars. And for whatever reason, fill in the blanks. The moral authority that Jewish scholars established over an awfully long period of history has been so decimated by the Israelis. It's been so, after what happened to the Jews of Europe, just during the Hitler years. I mean, forget the Jews of Europe, if you can, during the Crusades. Forget the Jews of Europe during other times, the pogroms, the slaughter. And all of a sudden, a tribe, a group of people, the Jews, with specific moral authority that to me, just in my little corner of the universe, is not granted by any supreme being. I don't believe in that nonsense, but I do believe that for whatever reason, I don't know, the tribalism, the cultural identity, whatever it is, Jewish scholars, thinkers have truly, truly, truly been some of the leading proponents of morality, justice, truth, dignity, honor. And if you don't believe that, then I don't know what to tell you. Go educate yourself, I guess. I don't know. Whatever you want to do. But that's my belief. And to see that moral authority, that sense of justice, so trashed by Israelis is just, I don't know. It is heartbreaking to me. On the one hand, on the other hand, it's enraging. Of course, it's enraging to see a state, Israel, perpetrate such atrocities against the Palestinians. It's astonishing.
All things ain't what they used to be. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live near Baba's lives. Oh, mercy me.
It's about 9 before the hour. A little bit more here from Marcy Winograd's political website. She writes, if my opponent, that would be Jane Harman, wanted to exercise leadership, she would demand the United States government condemn these murders. Her silence leaves those of us in the 36th Congressional District once again to wonder whether Jane Harman is truly represents all the people of this district, or just the military contractors and those who prioritize Israel, right or wrong. Her, Harman's, tacit approval of such violent tactics also reconfirms my assertion that Harman's policies make us all less rather than more safe, end quote. You know, the more I listen to Winograd and read her position papers, the more I'm absolutely convinced that she is a Democrat that should be elected in the 36th Congressional District. That Jane Harman is just the same old, same old. This the kind of representative that liberals or progressives always bitch and complain about, but never get off their asses and do something about. It's you know, everybody knows that Harman is expected by the powers that be to win. Have you seen anybody from the Obama White House jump in support of Marcy Winograd? Of course you haven't. Do you think you will? Get serious. Now here she is. Isn't this the second time, Kathy, that she's run against Harman? Just busting her ass to get this, to get the truth out, to try to represent the people of the 36th. And I just wonder if the people in that district, I'm not condemning or complaining because I don't know. I don't live there, obviously. But I just wonder if the people in the California 36th district fully understand what Jane Harman does and why she does it. A and B, if they fully understand that they have a chance here with Marcy Winograd to truly elect, or I should say, to elect someone who is truly a progressive Democrat. I mean, we've had her on, what, three times? I think a couple of times when she ran last time. And this time, we're going to have her on again? Friday coming. This Friday? You have to say, it hasn't been confirmed yet. Okay. By our invitation, remember the last time she was on, I said, well, you know, let's try to get together before the primary. So this Thursday or Friday, if we get it confirmed, and I'm fairly sure that we will. But I've said before, don't everybody get all shocked. I've said before that any time I run across a candidate or an incumbent that I think is truly a progressive Democrat that is trying to work towards justice. I mean, isn't that the underpinning of everything? Justice. I don't care how you define it, but justice, whether it's economic or whatever, justice. And occasionally you run across a candidate still. I don't know why they keep coming forward. People like Marcy Winograd who truly want to put themselves into a situation that seems untenable from out here. I mean, you and I, we know what's our approval rate of Congress, 14-15%. Winograd knows that. So why does she want to go? For the money? Please. So why do people like her make a decision? She knows what she's up against. Make a decision to try to make things better, to bring some justice, whether it's here, abroad, Middle East, South Asia, Mexico, the United States, Canada, wherever. And what are her chances? In a just political system, her chances would be damn good. In the current political system, it all depends on whether or not people in the 36th Congressional District of California are aware of what Harman supports and advocates and what Winograd supports and advocates. It always gets down to that, doesn't it? Well, not always. A lot of these contests, you can't tell heads from tails. You can't tell. There's no difference in the candidates. There damn sure is in this one, boys and girls. I just hope that for once, not just once, but for in just one of those occasional times when someone that, you know, I think truly talks about justice and advocates justice gets elected. What do you think? You can always go to her website. I've mentioned it before. All right, we're out of time. I'll see you tomorrow night. All right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
This is a special.